Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjavi Hari. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapanantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Shri Gauru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे. I am very grateful to be here, and you must be hardcore because it's raining cats and dogs and dinosaurs and you're still here not listening online. That means you're serious. Today I'm going to speak from Bhagavad Gita chapter 10 verse 34 on the seven qualities of women, and there is a reason I'm speaking on this particular verse. It's on the instructions of Mother Mukhya. As she just mentioned, I was at the United Nations. I wish I could spend Gaur Purnima here. I love the vibe of Alachua, but sometimes what happens is I get a last-minute request from the Permanent Mission of India. How many of you know what the Permanent Mission of India is? You know, India's presence on U.S. soil happens at three different levels. At the basic level, there is the consulate. The consulate of India focuses on trade, issuing visas, things like that. Above that is the embassy. The embassy has the ambassador. So, you know, any politician makes negative comments about India in the Congress or the Senate, then the ambassador. Or if the president wants something to do with India, they call the ambassador. And then there is the Permanent Mission of India, which represents India's interests at an international level at the United Nations. So somehow, fortunately or unfortunately, over the years, what has happened is the work we do through the Institute for Vaishnava Studies has garnered enough attention that they wanted me to go and represent the Permanent Mission of India at the United Nations. And I just got an email at, you know, practically middle of the night on the 10th that you need to be here in New York by the 12th. So I contacted my university. I said, let's arrange for my tickets. And, you know, it was 3 a.m. in the morning. I was on to Orlando and then to New York and then got off the plane at 10 a.m. and was at the United Nations by 11. And such is my life. But this was a convention called the 69th Convention by the Commission for the Status of Women. And world leaders came together to see how women face a certain glass ceiling. That means not the same opportunities that are available to men are available to women. Even though the statistics from various nations show that when women are allowed to have a stake in economic decisions, prosperity comes to a particular community or a society much quicker. For example, there were hundreds of statistics thrown around at this event. I'll give you one example. It has been seen that in India, men usually use only 40% of their income for the welfare of the family, whereas women use up to 70% of their income for the welfare of the family. This is a proven statistic. So these kind of things were discussed. And the question was, you know, how do we open a path forward so that women can fully flourish and men need to be allies and supporters in such a mission? Right? So that was the essence of the meeting. And I, of course, in these situations, there are so many people saying so many things. You don't always get to say what you want in its full expression. And so one of the things, whatever I couldn't say there, I'll say here. Which is, Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, 34th verse, that there are seven qualities that are distinctly feminine. That are distinctly feminine. What are these qualities? You're going to remember this with me? Kriti. Can I hear you repeat it once? Sri, Vak, Smriti, Medha, Dhriti, Kshama. You see that verse there? So Shri Krishna explains in this verse that I am all-devouring death and I am the generating principle of all that is yet to be. Right? So that means, have you seen, some of you might have seen the movie about the H-bomb? What was that movie called? Oppenheimer. When the first nuclear explosion went off on the planet, Oppenheimer repeated this verse that I am all-devouring death. So Krishna in the principle of Shiva destroys and Krishna in the principle of Brahma creates. And therefore creation and destruction both come from Vishnu or Krishna. And then Krishna says, Kriti. Kriti means fame. Women, the first quality of women is that they are naturally famous. People inquire more about them than men. And the only proof that you may need is to just go on social media. You know, do an experiment. If you have a sister or a mother, just ask her to post a picture with a rose on her platform and you do the same with your platform and see how many more likes you get. Right? Women naturally attract more attention in public. This is called fame. Sometimes men get upset about it. But my dear brothers, uncles, nephews, this is Sri Krishna's arrangement that women are meant to naturally be famous. Their fame is a natural quality of femininity. The second quality is Sri. Sri means opulence or beauty. Can we go to the word-for-word translation quickly? Yes. Opulence or beauty. This was, again, a very important point that if you want Sri, you need to, and Manusmriti that a lot of people hate, saying, because Manusmriti made a statement that women should be protected at all ages in their youth by their parents, especially the father, during her grihastha ashram by the husband, and in her old age by children, especially a son. So a lot of people get very upset when they hear this. A lot of people get very upset. But I might say a couple of controversial things today. Please forgive me and ask me any questions you have. I know practically every sister. I have several cousin sisters. And we grew up like our own, you know, they're like my own sisters. Everyone has told me that in India to get on a bus is such a difficult thing. There is 99% chance that because you're a woman, you're going to get molested in public. Right? And who are doing this? It's the uneducated, insensitive men who are not civilized. They are doing this. And for those of us who practice dharma, it is our responsibility to protect. She may not have her father there, or a brother there, or her son there, but depending on your age, you stand up for what is right. For this reason, Srila Prabhupada asked men in this society to generically call women Mataji at one point. Because he saw that women are not being treated with respect. And in India, the word Mataji is used to treat women with respect. Of course, in ISKCON, it had the opposite effect after some time. But I'm not going to get into any controversies tonight. Sri Krishna ends the Bhagavad Gita by saying, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Partha Dhanurdharaha. Wherever there is Krishna, wherever there is Arjuna the archer, Tatra Vijaya. Vijaya means victory. Sri means wealth and opulence. And Bhuti means success. Dhruva Niti Matir Mama. This is an inviolable statement, and this is what I have to say about the world. This is how Sanjaya ended the Bhagavad Gita. And that same word Sri is mentioned in this verse. Sri means opulence, beauty, abundance. And Manusmriti also says that in a society where ladies are protected and given the freedom to flourish, there will be abundance. It's just a natural, you know, process that is designed by Prakriti. The third is Vak. Vak means fine speech. You know, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and she knows how to get things out of me. She knows when to say Baba and when to say Baba. Sometimes she will growl like a cat. Sometimes she will meow. So she knows. And she's been doing this since she was three. She has me at her fingertips, like Krishna had Govardhan on his fingertips, like left, like, you know. Ladies, you know how to manipulate your fathers, don't you? You know what to get out of. You just have to say things sweetly. And so Krishna says that vak, or fine speech, is one of the superpowers of women. So this class is about the seven superpowers of women, according to Krishna. Okay? And he says of narinam, of nara is a Sanskrit word, means man or human. Nari is the feminine. Right? These are feminine attributes. Then smriti. Smriti means memory. You may forget, she will not forget. Am I correct, ladies? I did not say it. Krishna said it. If you have any problems, talk to Shyam. He knew it very well, so therefore he could manage 16,108 without them getting into conflict with one another. That is Krishna's superpower. But Krishna says that they will remember things much better than men do. Huh? Then comes the most controversial thing, and you know, we can have a whole debate on this, and I can split the floor, and you know, we can go on, and I know this is so controversial, you will skip prasad. But Krishna said, intelligence is the sign of women. Medha. Huh? Medha means intelligence, according to Prabhupada. So those who complain, Prabhupada said women are less intelligent. Prabhupada also said, listen to Krishna. Right? Of course, Prabhupada meant something. My interpretation of this is, some women stupidly listen to men's manipulative words. That is where they are less intelligent. Because of the goodness of their heart, they stop their thinking process. They just, you know, switch off. And I know so many friends who said, you know, they were in a bad marriage because they were in love. And then they went and regretted it. Right? So intelligence is a sign of femininity, according to Krishna. Then dhriti. Dhriti means firmness. That means once they have a resolve, they will stand up for it. If they love you, they will sacrifice the whole world for you. And in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction, Prabhupada gives a very interesting example of what it is like to love God. He said, a pure devotee of God is like a married woman in love with somebody else. Not that this is encouraged, but she has the fortitude. Dhriti means fortitude. Fortitude to be impeccable with everything in her life so that nobody figures out who she is actually in love with. And so we must be like that with Krishna, that we must be so expert in the material world, nobody will figure out that we are in love with Krishna. But in our heart of hearts, the only reason we do anything properly is Krishna. So some groups of Vaishnavas called Sahajiyas, they take things cheaply. Say that, you know, extramarital affairs are good. Krishna had it. What's wrong if I do it? If you copy Krishna, you will be ruined. You are not Krishna. But that example from Krishna is a very important spiritual lesson. That in the world, ultimately, no matter who you love, it will be a source of pain. And that pain is not worth it. Only pain that comes from loving Krishna is worth it. Because other kinds of pain bound us in the world and make us suffer. And pain that comes from loving Krishna liberates us. And remember, there is a difference between pain and suffering. I have said this before. Pain is inevitable. Suffering is an option. How you respond to pain decides whether you're actually suffering or not. So dhriti means fortitude. Fortitude means you are not affected by pain. So if you see, by nature's arrangement, men don't give childbirth because men don't have this quality as much as women do. Ask any mothers here, they will know what it takes to birth a child. Right? That is dhriti. Sixth quality. And seventh quality is kshama. Kshama, Prabhupada translates as patience. Another meaning of kshama is forgiveness. And thus patience and forgiveness are synonymous to each other. You are not able to forgive unless you are patient with the person you are forgiving. And think about it this way. If somebody puts a bunch of hot coals in your hand, will you keep holding on to it thinking, okay, one day I will take revenge? Will you hold on to the hot coals and thinking, you know, I will put this back on you. This person has put the hot coals in your hand, has gone away. And you're holding on to it. Who's burning? You. So the solution is to drop it. First, tend to your own hand. So when people misbehave with us, they are unjust with us, we feel wronged. And we feel a need for revenge. Forgiveness is not our first instinct, not our first response. But forgiveness is a better thing to do for our own healing. And Sri Krishna says that this comes naturally to women, kshama. So these are the seven qualities, feminine qualities, according to Bhagavad Gita. And if Krishna says something, all our shastras say that his words are as good as the Vedas. They are inviolable. So I have nothing more to add to Sri Krishna, except what Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, and I'll finish with that and open the floor up for any questions, comments, and realizations. Srila Prabhupada says, the seven opulences listed, fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience, are considered feminine. If a person possesses all of them or some of them, he becomes glorious. And when Prabhupada uses he, it is in the English language, it means both he and she, mind you. The English language is structured in such a way that you use one gender for both. At least till the feminist revolution. If a man is famous as a righteous man, that makes him glorious. Sanskrit is a perfect language and is therefore very glorious. It is after studying one can remember a subject matter. He is gifted with a good memory or smriti. And the ability not only to read many books on different subject matters, but to understand them and apply them when necessary is intelligence, medha, another opulence. The ability to overcome unsteadiness is called firmness or steadfastness, dhriti. And when one is fully qualified, yet is humble and gentle, when one is able to keep his balance both in sorrow and in ecstasy of joy, he has the opulence called patience or kshama. So I will pause here and open the floor up for any questions, comments, and realizations. Hare Krishna. We have...
Thank you very much. I do know that the... edited Bhagavad Gita was based on Prabhupada's lectures or written also, but this is one purport that was very dear to my heart. So I just want to say what I remember from the first version. It did say, if a woman possesses all of them or some of them, she becomes glorious. And at the end, it says, it is not necessary to read many books. The ability to remember a few and quote them when necessary is also another opulence. So I think both are very wonderful, but I just wanted to share.
Thank you for pointing that out. Appreciate it. Yes.
I just wanted to comment on the fact that, you know, you mentioned how women, they don't like the idea sometimes.
They don't?
They don't like the idea that, you know, they're protected in their youth by their father and by their husband when they're married, and later on by their son. And that even I read that, you know, in India, a woman would hardly see, anyone would see her. You know, she would just go in a what do you call it?
Covered palanquin.
Yeah, palanquin, right, from place to place. So, you know, one way to look at that is that it's some kind of subjugation, which is what causes a negative attitude. But another way to look at it is that such a valued personality that you want to protect their purity, correct? And you know,
that's a very good point. You know, there are different times in India where the attitudes towards women differ. In the Vedic period, they have independence, and they go about anywhere, they study the Vedas, and so on and so forth. But there has been invasions of India, you know, I mean, in the Western world, you call him Alexander the Great. I don't think he was that great. He was brutal. Just because he's European doesn't mean that he's great. And then Mahmud of Ghaznavi, all these people, what they do? When they wage war on a certain land, they rape and they kill. And when India was under this kind of subjugation, then, you know, societal rules were made where women were, you know, indoors. They wouldn't go out because they were prime targets. Right? And that it's for that reason. But at the same time, when you become overpowering, and even Krishna gives everybody their free will. If you take that away from somebody because there happened to be a woman in your house, that breeds a lot of negative energy. Right? At the end of the day, even if someone wants to not practice Krishna consciousness, like take Prabhupada's example. First of all, you know, every day I thank Srila Prabhupada's former wife. If it wasn't for her, we wouldn't be here. You know, first, she, whatever she was, she played a role in creating detachment in Srila Prabhupada's heart. And therefore, he made every one of us his family, not just his seven biological children. He treated the spiritual children equally, just like his children. But you know, he gave her the independence to do what she wanted. She wanted to drink tea, he disagreed, but he said for this reason, but she had the freedom. He never oppressed her. I think oppression in the name of protection is a problem. That we fail to recognize that these are equal creatures of God. And, you know, sometimes women also manipulate men. And I'm not going to get into a gender war here in Lachua. But the fact remains that in the material world, we are constantly trying to overpower each other. Men or women, doesn't matter. It is the nature of the world to try and overpower other living entities to establish your supremacy. And this is what makes the material world. That you are the supreme, not Krishna. And this is why Prabhupada keeps emphasizing Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. That is his translation of the word Bhagavan. that you are not the Supreme. We behave, even though we theoretically accept that Krishna is the Supreme, we behave as if we are the Supreme. Myself included, guilty as charged. I have to constantly remind myself, right, that you are not in charge, you are not the Supreme. Krishna is in charge, you are not in control. Radharani is in control. Saraswati Thakur used to say that in Bengali there is a word called raw, and with a little spot underneath. If you take the spot away, it becomes a ba. So the word Radha, you take the spot away, it becomes badha. Badha means obstacle. You know, either you have the grace of Radha or you understand badha. You face badha in your life. Saraswati Thakur used to say this. And essentially, this means that somewhere you have to let go of your, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur points this out very bluntly. And it took me a good few years to come to realize what Thakur was saying. He starts a song by saying, Charata Purusha Abhiman, which means, my friend, give up your fragile male ego. You won't be able to understand what is love of Krishna unless you give up your male ego. Can we bring out that song, Prabhu? Charata Purusha Abhiman in Krishna KK songs, if we can. Huh. And so, the solution to the gender war that is going on in the world is in the theology and practice of Krishna consciousness. It is just a question of changing our mindset. Huh? That Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, Krishnero Sangsaro Karo Chari Anachar Jivedaya Krishna Nam Sarva Dharmasar. If you want to become a family person, think of the family that you build or have as Krishna's family. These are the souls, whether I like them or not, who has been put into my life by Krishna. And it is for me to serve them however I can to the best of my ability. I am not the lord and master of this house. And you know, I had the good fortune of spending a lot of time with the family of Bhaktivinoda Thakur when I was doing my research on Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And everybody said similar things about him. He would say, Age manush hao, tarpor Vaishnava hobe. This was something he commonly told everybody. First become a human being, then try to become a Vaishnava. If you are not behaving like a human being, be civilized, be gentle, don't have integrity, be clean in your dealings and your circumstances. Put in hard work every day, be compassionate. This is the basis of being civilized. Don't cut the line. You know, this is a very big problem in India. People don't understand what is a straight line. I'm there like every month practically, you know, at the airport. If you say at the security, you know, I am delayed for my flight, people will give you that space. But somehow they don't think. They think it is my birthright and other people exist for, you know, just moving aside. Right? So there are attitudes, you know, just because it's India doesn't mean it's perfect. We should not take anything blindly. The only thing about India is, in its traditional sense, India is called Bharat. And Bhakti Charu Maharaj, who is one of my spiritual teachers, used to say Bharat not only refers to the characters of Bharat or the descendants of Bharat who took care of this land, Bharat also means the land in which there is pursuit of knowledge of spirituality. Bhaskar Gyane Rato Jai Desh. Prangovinda Prabhu, you can correct me. Bhaskar Gyane Rato Jai Desh. The land that pursues spiritual knowledge is Bharat. So to the extent India actually pursues it is Bharat. To the extent it doesn't, it is India, because India is a term that is given to people and the land, India and Indians, by the Greek. It's like Americans starting to call themselves Yankees because others call them Yankees. That's what Indians do. They call themselves Indians because others call them Indians. But no, They are from Bharat, they are Bharatiyas, their dharma is called Sanatana Dharma. As simple as that. And Bhagavata very clearly says what is Sanatana Dharma. Satya, Saucha, Tapa and Daya. This is the basis. And Savai Pumsa Paro Dharma, Yatha Bhakti Adhokshaje. Ultimate dharma is surrendered to Adhokshaja, Krishna, Vishnu. Right? And so, to the extent this is practiced, it is Bharat. To the extent it is being practiced on American soil, this is a spiritual embassy of India, this temple. You know, embassy is essentially an outpost on a foreign land which is considered to be native soil. If I hold an Indian passport, I can go to the Indian consulate or the embassy. I am on Indian soil even if I am in America. This is the idea of a consulate or an embassy. And then every embassy will have its ambassadors, consulate generals, directors, things like that. Similarly, these temples that initially Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada then established, and now his followers are establishing around the world, are essentially consulates and embassies of the spiritual world from Vrindavan, Mayapur and Jagannath Puri. Right? And once we come here, we are in Bharat. Bharat is a concept. Bharat is not just geographical land. That land from where it came is very fortunate. All the avatars that we know about appeared there. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, don't think that avatars appear only in India. To the extent there is dharma in any community, any society, avatars appear there as well. And there are infinite number of avatars, as many as there are waves in an ocean. And to the extent avatars appear, they reinstate dharma. And to the extent the devotee of that avatar appears, they can give bhakti. Krishna doesn't give bhakti, only a bhakta gives bhakti. Therefore we worship Krishna in the form of a bhakta, Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Other questions, comments, thoughts, realizations? I gave a very long answer to a very short question. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you. It's a very nice topic. I was contemplating on that verse and thinking about Draupadi versus Arjuna regarding Ashwatthama's case.
Oh.
Or Jayadratha's case.
Oh,
we can take
God.
Either one. In Jayadratha's case, they asked, Arjuna and Bhima asked Yudhishthir Maharaj, Yudhishthir Maharaj, because he is the head of the family, if they can kill Jayadratha because he kidnapped Draupadi while she is married and devoted and she had no interest on Jayadratha. So Yudhishthira Maharaj says, he did not commit crime against me. It was against Draupadi, so she should decide. She said, don't kill. Shama, one of the...
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness. And she gave a good reason. Because Jayadratha married to your cousin, whole life she will remain widow in Vedic culture those days. And every time she sees or think of us, she will think, oh, they are the cause of my all suffering. So she literally demonstrated that for our future good relationship with the cousins, don't kill, forgive. But Bhima was shaking his muscle. He said, this is intolerable. How can he kidnap our wife while we are alive? So Krishna appeared there and he asked Krishna, can you allow me to kill him?
Jayadratha.
Because he committed a heinous activities. Krishna says, to an honorable man, dishonor is worse than death.
Correct.
Arjuna, you please act on that principle. So there's a whole explanation about the hair cutting.
Ashwatthama
that the whole life, Jayadratha will feel that his dishonored. He cannot function in the society.
Yes.
Because some spot in the hair... Anyway, I won't go detail.
Krishna psychologically killed him, keeping him physically alive.
Right. Don't kill him, but dishonor him in a way.
And
so he did. Arjuna did. The point was here, He could not go back to his family, or he went to Shiva, Kailash, and he did any whole pastime. But my point is, yes, Draupadi's karma is important. I appreciate that. And she gave a logic. But I also appreciate Arjuna's and Bhima's appealing that if somebody does such a heinous activity, there is some reformation has to take place. Regret will not come unless there is some thoughtful...
introspection.
Yes, introspection.
Correct.
So both are required.
Correct. And another character, Srimad Bhagavatam, has a whole chapter on son of Drona punished.
Yes.
Ashwathaman was also dishonored because dishonor is worse than death. But they maintained dharma. At the same time, they did what was needful. So the Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam is an excellent case on how to balance justice and mercy. In the name of mercy, you cannot let corrupt behavior flourish. In the name of justice, you cannot compromise mercy. So dharma is the fine balance that exists between justice and mercy. And Yudhishthir Maharaj knew dharma, therefore Krishna supported Yudhishthir Maharaj. Thank you. Yes, other points, questions?
Thank you so much. This is actually one of my favorite verses that you covered. I have a comment and a question. I'll say the comment first. It was actually before I took up Krishna consciousness, a friend of mine, I don't remember what it was someone said to her, but she told me, so I just went off and left him with those ugly words in his mouth. You know, in other words, the kshama, the patience, her revenge was whatever someone had said to her, she didn't contradict it. She just let him hear what he had said. But that's a comment. But my question is, you know, this song, when you said this Purusha Abhiman, that's all of us, isn't it?
Yes.
In this world.
Just because you're in a female body does not mean you don't have male ego.
Right.
Male ego happens irrespective of gender.
Right.
Therefore, in the very next line, Charata Purush Abhiman, can we go back to the verse? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Kinkori hoilo ajikan. He's in a male body, but he says, I am your feminine servant. We sing every morning, Ei moro abhilash, bilash kunje diobash. And then we say, hoibo dashi, that, you know, men and women sing that we will become your female servant, maid servant. So the idea of gender in Sanskrit is very different from the idea of gender in English. In Sanskrit, there are three genders. Three genders. Purush, stri, and kliba. Kliba means neither both. Third gender. So those who say in the US Congress and other places there are only two genders, yes, that is the Judeo-Christian version. The Vedic version is no. There is male, female, and neither both. Right? Number one. Number two, the idea that I, Abhiman, man means I deserve respect, I am entitled to respect. That is the foundation of male ego. And the medicine for that is given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. That you have to constantly remind yourself that, you know, you don't deserve any respect. You're not entitled to anything. But on the other hand, you must give all respect to others. Only when you are able to come to this state of mind, you will be able to chant Krishna's beautiful names constantly and enjoy it. We chant Krishna's names, we don't enjoy it. We enjoy the music sometimes. We enjoy the attention that comes from being an accomplished sadhaka. We enjoy the feeling of accomplishment when we are able to finish our 16 rounds. But we don't necessarily enjoy Krishna's names. But our acharyas say that loving Krishna means you will relish and enjoy Krishna's names. There is nothing sweeter than that. There is nothing more beautiful than that. There is nothing more sublime than that. And when you are able to enjoy Krishna's names, you will know that you have skipped the 10 offenses. And now you are able to know Krishna is directly embracing you through his name. And sometimes, you know, we get too hung up. Like, for example, I think that there is some kind of a quasi-mistranslation. When we say the first offense to the holy name is to blaspheme the devotees of the Lord who have dedicated their lives in spreading the Sankirtan movement, which is not incorrect. But the original is very simple. It says Satam Ninda. Satam Ninda means don't badmouth good people. That's what the first offense is. If you, it's not even, Radha, Radha means to stop. These are obstacles to chanting the holy names. Aparadha means obstacles that take you down. What is the first aparadha? To badmouth good people. If you badmouth good people, it will weigh on your heart and you won't be able to chant peacefully. It's as simple as that. And of course, by extension, it means to all devotees who have dedicated their lives to spreading the Sankirtan movement. But at its core, it means Satam Ninda. Don't badmouth good people. Then the holy name gradually begins to flourish. Yes, Prabhu.
I just want to add a little bit into this discussion.
Please.
The scientific point of view of glorification of women. I'm going to tell a little bit about the science behind it. We have been talking about the Vedic literature. Then how the science supports this original fact.
Yes, very briefly, because another devotee has a question and we have 3 minutes to go.
Right. So I will just give the just scientific points, not the explanation then. So we know that our body has a 46 chromosomes.
Oh.
So there are 2 points which I'm going just to explain it. So the last pair of the chromosomes, everyone has understanding of the basic science, what chromosomes are. So they are XY chromosomes.
Correct.
The male, they carry XY. Female, they carry XX. So their chromosomes are not polluted. They are pure. But men's chromosomes, they carry half of the woman and half of the men. So they are not pure.
Okay.
So this is the first point of their purity and glorification. The second point, we say that Nari Shakti. So Shakti comes, the energy comes from the mitochondria in our body, which basically is the production, energy production house in our body. So when the ovum and sperms, they unite and they go through fertilization, the mitochondria from the male sperm gets destroyed. The mitochondria, which we carry ultimately, comes from the woman, the mother parts. So the energy source of energy in all the living entities, in human beings, comes from the mother.
Correct.
Not from the father.
So I am not
so
an
that is another point.
I am not an expert in biology, so I cannot vouch for what you said. Our friends at the Bhaktivedanta Institute are more qualified. But I will say this, that you know, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, Prabhupada translated as, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, as Radharani. So he acknowledged that part. So thank you for that. Last comment and question. Thank you. Sorry, devotees are hungry, so we have to rush a little bit in the interest of time.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. So in case of Jayadratha, Draupadi was showed the compassionate. She gave the reasons why not to kill him, right? But in case of Dushasana, right, when he disrobed, then she kept her hair open, and then she wanted to only tie when he's killed with the blood of him. So I know, how do we understand this at one point of time?
How to, so Draupadi kept her hair open and she did not forgive Dushasana till he was killed, but with Jayadratha he is, you know, I told at Krishna House the other day that we should have Mahabharat Mondays. I am happy to do it. But that is, that would be a better forum to discuss, because Mahabharat, it is endless. The moment you get into it, it will suck you in and you will lose track of time. And it is 6 p.m. and it's time for prasad. But we can discuss it over dinner.
Sure. Earlier you said something about not to compromise dharma and the mercy.
So I said mercy and justice. So in Dushasana's case, if she did not do it, it would be unjust. Because Dushasana was the one who dragged her from when she was menstruating and in the middle of the court and called her a prostitute, even though she was the most powerful princess of the most powerful country at that time. Can I take 5 more minutes, if I may? This one idea from the Mahabharata will actually put everything in context. So, okay, this is Mahabharata in 5 minutes. Essentially, Bharata is the land coming from Bharat Maharaj and his descendants, right? To bear weight is bhara in Sanskrit. So with spiritual knowledge, you have responsibilities that you must bear out. So to bear that responsibility on your shoulder is the birth, you know, like in the United States, if you're born, you're born with debt on your shoulders, right? The debt that every Indian is born with on their shoulders is that they have this culture of spiritual knowledge that they must share with the world. This is the burden of love that every Indian must carry forward, every Bharatiya. That's why Mahaprabhu said, Bharata bhumite manushya janmojar. He did not say, in the world manushya janmojar. He said, if you have a human birth in Bharata bhumi, you have a particular special responsibility to help others. And whoever you meet, share the advice of Krishna. On my instruction, become a guru or a spiritual teacher. He wanted every one of us to become spiritual leaders. And Krishna wanted the same. So essentially, Krishna wanted the kings of all of these various kingdoms. And there were 16 major kingdoms called the Mahajanapadas. He wanted their kings to be spiritual leaders. That's what Krishna wanted. The two most powerful kingdom was Kuru and Panchala, next to each other. And on the west of Panchala was Gandhar, which was Shakuni's kingdom. And the west of Kuru was Gandhar, which was Shakuni's kingdom. And east of Kuru was Panchala. And in those days, kingdoms managed to not fight with each other through marriage alliances. So Dhritarashtra married the princess of Gandhar. Therefore, Kuru and Gandhar would not fight. On the basic premise that Shakuni, who was the king of Gandhara, would staying in the Kuru court. And they wanted the princess of Panchala, who was the most powerful lady from the other side, other border, to become a princess of the sun. And Krishna managed to make sure that the Pandavas marry the Draupadi. Because if you consolidate power, where all these three kingdoms come together, and the head of that is Dhritarashtra, who's a corrupt person blind towards his son, it is a disaster for everybody. Therefore, Sri Krishna stayed in jungles, hung out with the Pandavas, did whatever he could to save their life, including stand as a charioteer in front of Arjuna so that he could take the bullets or the arrows for him. But here is the little, you know, in math books, you have the math problem and then you have the answer at the back. Here is a little answer at the back of Mahabharata. Drupada, who is Draupadi's father, had promised as a child that when I grow up and I become a king, I will give you half my kingdom to Drona. And Drona kept all of the secrets of weaponry that gave security to the country. When Drupada became king, he said, nothing doing, that was childhood banter. And Drona said, fine, I have the knowledge of weapons that keeps your country secure. You know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to go to your enemy country and I'm going to teach their kids how to use them. And one day I'm going to see you in the battlefield. So therefore, in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, if you read it carefully, Drupada is standing on the side of the Pandavas. And Drona is standing on the other side. Now, Drupada and Drona have a fight with each other just as much as, say, Bhima and Duryodhana have a fight. It is not against Yudhishthir and Duryodhana. Yudhishthir doesn't want to fight. Arjuna says, what's the point of fighting if my brother, who's going to be the king, doesn't want to be the king? Kimnu Rajyena Govinda, what am I going to do with this kingdom? And Krishna says, you have to fight for the sake of Dharma. And if you look at the Bhagavad Gita, if you've heard this before, forgive me, but the first syllable, you know what a syllable is? Parts of a word. First syllable of the Bhagavad Gita is dhar, dharma kshetre, kuru kshetre. And the last syllable of the Bhagavad Gita is ma, Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. So from the first syllable to the last syllable of the Bhagavad Gita, it is about dharma. Krishna says, I am here to protect dharma. And Arjuna, you're not fighting to become a king, you're fighting to protect dharma. And each one of us must fight in our own capacity, in our lives, struggle wherever we can to protect and practice dharma and uplift others through the principles of dharma, such as balancing justice and mercy. Okay, I have taken my 5 minutes. I will stop. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.